My name's Rebecca Kent. I'm the Special Projects Editor at EG, and I'm sitting here alongside Niccolo Barrettieri di San Pietro, who is the Chief Executive of Northacre. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
So we've just had a look around the show apartment for Broadway, which is the scheme which will appear on the site of the old Scotland Yard, I suppose is the best way to describe it.
Yes, absolutely. It's our latest scheme. It's a nearly a 2-acre island site in the centre of Westminster, you know, the most historic borough probably in central London. And it's a great opportunity to create something fantastic. We're looking to create a vibrant mixed-use scheme, you know, where it's going to be led by high-end residential, but it's going to have retail and as well office space as well. So we're looking to create a destination within now what is going to be a destination in itself. That part of Westminster has changed dramatically.
Great. So just take us through the scheme. How many residential units, how much retail space, office space, and the public realm? Just take us through that.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you got to look back and we've demolished it now, but what the site of New Scotland Yard was, it was a non-permeable, austere, and very closed building, rightly so. It was housing New Scotland Yard. What we're doing is we're creating a really permeable site. We're creating a new thoroughfare, which is going to be the same width as New Bond Street. It's going to be pedestrianized. It's going to have a 20,000 square foot plaza at the top of it. And what we're doing, we're creating 25,000 square feet of new retail. We're going to have about 120,000 square feet of office space, and then it's going to be 268 apartments.
Have you sold any, and what sort of buyers are you marketing the apartments to?
Absolutely. Well, we started the selling process in early September, which is quite far out because development is going to be finished at the end of 2021. So we're really talking starting 5 years ahead. But because we have 268 units, as I said, we wanted to start the process early, which is never easy. What we did is we started simultaneously in London, first of all, because we have a lot of repeat business, a lot of buyers that have bought in our previous schemes over the last 25 years, which obviously we want to give them first dibs on units that they might want to buy ahead of time. And then after that, we went to the Middle East and to Asia as well. The approach that we have to London and the Middle East is very different than what we have in Asia. We had never gone to Asia. They don't know our brand. So we did more of a Northacre tour to talk about the brand. We did exhibitions there whilst in the Middle East and in London. It's really one-on-ones with clients that we already know.
Any joy with sales so far?
Yes, we've sold quite a few. You know, I'm not here to tell you how many already after 2 months.
Oh,
but
come
we
on.
Are,
no. Are you pleased?
No.
Are you pleased so far?
I am pleased. I am pleased because, you know, we're not talking huge numbers, but I am pleased for the fact that, you know, it is 5 years out. And to convey the message and to excite people 5 years out is never easy. And I think we've succeeded, which is great. And so I think it's going to get easier as time goes by as well.
Will we see in the apartments any features that reflect the former use of the site, the New Scotland Yard flavour?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, the new, old, New Scotland Yard, let's say, building was a bit of an unfortunate building, really. We can say that, right? I mean, it wasn't a beauty. I don't think it won any awards. So I think we did a service to the London community of actually bringing it down. What the new building does is first of all take a great advantage of all the views that have there, because, you know, I think that the panoramas that you have from these apartments are truly incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, in London many people talk about, oh, you know, I've got great views and so on, but when you have it from this building here, where you really have four World Heritage sites at your doorstep nearly, they are incredible. And then what we really liked is we took a cue from 55 the Broadway, which is the building just north of this site, which is a TfL building that has a St. James's Park tube station underneath. It's an Art Deco building. It was built in 1929. It was the tallest building in central London at that point. And it's actually quite interesting because when they built it, they hadn't figured out that the ladders of the firemen didn't go that far up. So they could only occupy it from the bottom seven floors because they couldn't have extinguished fires in case there were any. So they put all the plant and the amenity up on the higher floors.
Oh.
And they used the lower ones. But what we really like about that building, we like the Art Deco style. style. We liked the fact that it had a podium. The podium enables you to differentiate uses quite well, infill the sites denser at the lower end, at the lower part of it, and then go up height, with height, but not with bulk. Because at the end we are about quality square feet and not, you know, total number of square feet. And it's a bit of an art and a science all together. And so we took cues from that. Our building has diamond-shaped windows that look great from the outside, but actually give you a great sense when you're inside, because you've got 2.7-meter high windows that are mostly about at the width, the widest about 2.7 as well. Because of how the buildings are, the vast majority of the apartments are dual aspect, so there's a huge amount of light, and actually how these type of windows frame the views outside, it's just different and cool, or so I've been told.
I understand with the One Palace Street scheme, some of the newer apartments are sold really well, particularly to a younger kind of demographic. Is something I
heard. Yeah, I think Palace Street is a very, very interesting example, because it's difficult always to compare, because you're always in a different location if you're comparing two different buildings. Whilst this one here is a building that has five different architectural styles all in one development, because it's a whole block. And so you're selling a building that is, you know, 1870 with, you know, Versailles flooring and big cornices and so on, and then you're selling a new build section to it. And it's interesting to look at the demographics and to see when families come in what the grown children like, let's say, and what the parents like. And, you know, the parents like the more traditional, overlooking the gardens of Buckingham Palace, which I'm very happy because they're the most expensive ones. And whilst the children actually don't care so much for the view and the association with the palace, but want, you know, the more contemporary look. So it was interesting that sometimes we sold an apartment on one side to the parents, and then the children, they gave the children one on the other side.
So will it be the parents or the children you're targeting for the Broadway?
It's going to be more the children, to tell you the truth, because the Broadway is, you know, you've gone through the apartment now. It is quite a minimalist approach to it. We believe that high-end residential is moving away from having, you know, everything clad with wood and everything. I think you have to give a canvas that becomes an expression for people that live in it, because a lot of these people, you know, some of the art that they have is actually more expensive than the actual apartment. And so you have to think it in those terms and actually give them a canvas to express themselves, because when their friends come, that's what they judge in a certain way. And but the Broadway is a fresher product. It's younger. It's the total lifestyle. You know, you control all the services through an app. I think it's going to cater more for the slightly younger crowd. But then, you know, I might be wrong.
Oh, to live in a world where your art might be more expensive than the flat you're living in.
Yes.
What sort of prices are we talking about for the
so
various
we
things? Start
had,
with penthouse going down to, say, one
bit. Oh, you want to start from the highest one.
Yeah.
So the most expensive units are 20 million, give or take half a million either side.
And how many of those are there?
I would say of those, there are about six. And what you have is you've got 360-degree views around. You've got one of them, you've got 37 windows. So from the master bedroom, you're looking at Buckingham Palace, and then you go in the living room and you're looking directly onto the Abbey, Parliament, Big Ben, and the London Eye. So special, absolutely, and different, because how we did the floor plates of the buildings, they're actually quite small. So these apartments are 4,000 kind of square foot apartments, and you have your own floor, it's all yours, and you've got the whole four sides of the building, which is unique. And then if we go to all the way to the lower end, we had the cheapest apartments was 1.56 million that sold. Don't quote me on this next number. I think that the cheapest one now is about 1.9, something like that, 1.95, around that number there.
It's no secret that sort of high-end residential market is slightly depressed, I suppose you might describe it. How are you finding that, given that's really what you guys do, high-end residential?
You know, I think depressed, one hasn't gone to other markets, right? That there are some depressed markets. I think that we were used to an abnormal situation here in London for 20 years. And because there aren't many people that have been in residential for more than 20 years, that's all they've known. It is slower, there's no doubt about it. There are less buyers around, no doubt. There has been some pricing pressure. And will probably that continue for a couple more years? Very, very possible. You know, I think that if 3 or 4 years ago when the market peaked in the middle of 2014, I would say June 2014, and you would have said, you know, in the next few years, after you had a bull market run for 20 years, you're going to have a stamp duty going to go up twice. You're going to have non-dom rules changed. You're going to have a Brexit. You're going to have an unstable government. You're going to have labor potentially maybe coming in. You're going to have Brexit negotiations going. Well, we all don't know really how they're going. I would have told you that the hit on the market would have been much greater than it has been. And I think one has to, I'm a trader by background in equities, you have to always look at the price action of the market and how it responds to news. And I think it's responded decently well, actually, to all the news that has come onto it after having been so good for 20 years, which is easy to knock it off. My view is actually, I think that the high end and the super low end will actually do decently well in the coming years, you know, forget the times that we had, right? But it's going to be flat to slightly up in the coming years. I think where the problem is really in the mid section, because there is a huge amount of supply coming to the market. Whilst in the high end, you know, people talk, oh, there are so many. There aren't that many sites that are actually being built at the moment that are going to be delivered. And I think when this is going to be delivered in 2021, there are going to be very few developments that are going to be finishing at that point.
How much pressure is that put on your marketing, though, in the meantime, given, you know, Brexit, the sort of tax conditions, the stamp duty and those sort of things? Have you got the same buyers looking at London? Are they a bit nervous?
I think that there are different things going on. First of all, I think we have to, even though marketing has always been kind of one of our fortes because we've been doing it for 25 years, you know, you have to up your marketing game dramatically, right? You really have to give them and convey the sense that this is special and that it's an emotional purchase. That's a very important point. I think the buyers that there are still around. There are less, as I said before, and they take their time because they think, well, whilst before the penthouse would have gone right away, it's going to be a while, and maybe if I don't buy this one, I can buy that one over there. And so it takes longer to have these people to commit.
So Asia, you're paying particular attention to, you're saying it's sort of a fairly new
market. It's a fairly new market for us, but the reason why we're going is that the type of product that we're also putting together, which is 80% of our apartments are 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. So we've also, in a certain way, built a scheme around the criticalities that you just done, that me and you have just talked about until now. If you look at One Palace Street, the average apartment size is over 2,000 square feet. The average apartment size of the Broadway is 1,100. That automatically, if they were also apples and apples as far as price per square foot, dramatically reduces the capital value of each unit. And then this brings us to a new market where actually people say, oh, you know, they don't buy at that end. They will be buying at that end, and they will be buying more, and they will be the biggest buyers at that end for a very long period to come. And I think it's important that people like us understand that, go there, acquaint us with, you know, with how they are looking to purchase, you know, apartments, their decision making process, what they like and they don't like. And that's what we're doing at the moment.
And the Middle Eastern market is still strong. The appetite for London residential is strong, you think?
No, they've been here for decades, right? They're really the first foreign groups that actually had been buying in London, and so yes, their appetite is still good. But like everybody else, their decision-making process is slower. They don't have a huge urge to be buying, you know, in the very, very short term.
Okay.
But we have sold to Middle Eastern clients. We've sold to Asian clients as well. So it is happening, but we've got to be at the top of our game.
Don't suppose you could give me a broad expectation of the geography of some of the buyers of this particular.
Well, you know, we started in 3 centres. We sold in all 3 centres. However, to give you a geographical breakdown after having done it for 2 months out of the 5-year period will be insignificant. Then we'd be sitting here in 3 or 4 months' time, and it could be totally different, right? Because it we're really playing the long game here. It's 268 units, and even if they've done well, you know, we haven't sold 268 units. So, you know, at the moment it's a mix. There is no real slant at the moment, actually, if I can say, between one or the other. But we're not talking huge numbers, right?
No.
So they're not statistically relevant.
So I don't suppose there's any appetite or you've given any thought whatsoever to perhaps some like uber high-end private rental schemes there, given, you know, given how the sales market is,
no,
or the challenges the sales market might be facing at the moment?
No, I give more thought to things that actually we're really good at, right? And we're really good at creating great apartments that people love to live in, and hopefully we're able to convey that through our marketing process. You've seen some of it here today, where people actually are going to be enticed to buy.
Yeah, and this particular scheme, a revisal of the scheme was called in, wasn't it, by Sadiq Khan recently. I mean, what are your thoughts around the affordable housing viability and the 35% sort of policy that he's...
Well, I think that, you know, if we leave aside, you know, the issue with our scheme where he didn't give approval for the additional 27 units, even though we were not increasing the footprint of the building... it's unfortunately, you know, I think that London needed 27 more units. I think there's always the talk of having more units. We were creating slightly smaller units, hence more affordable as well. He decided not to give it. We already have a very good planning consent in place, which he kind of forgot to mention. And we'll see if we go to appeal towards that or not. Regarding
so that's not been decided.
We haven't decided yet. No, we haven't decided yet because we've got a really good scheme that we've already got planning for.
Yeah.
You know, people forget that, and you know, actually, we're already in the ground. We're ahead of program. We're already doing piling, so we're getting on with it. You know, I think of what's happening with the affordable housing and what is coming, and so on. I think it's missing the point of where the cycle of construction is very much. And sometimes people put policies in place at a time where actually they won't be able to be taken in consideration, because when you're going to be doing viability in the next 5 years, I can guarantee you can write it down that 99% of the schemes in central London will not be able to afford that level of affordable housing. And hence, the affordable housing that is going to be delivered by the private sector is going to come down regardless what the policy is. The point is, will the public sector actually step up and deliver their side of the equation? And my answer is probably not. If you look at the chart over a 50-year period, private sector has always delivered roughly the same amount of units. The gap is always from the public sector. So I think they should really start looking at how the public sector delivers affordable housing. Mm. So I think we're slightly missing the point, and we're missing the cycle completely.
So even after the Grenfell Tower, I think you saw the private sector coming together to provide housing.
Absolutely.
There. Yeah, I mean, do you not think that was perhaps an example of how the private sector could also, you know, contribute to housing for...
Absolutely, but you know, the private sector, if you take the example of a scheme like this, gives millions of pounds in payments in lieu. That money needs to be put to work. Is it being put to work in the best possible way? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing exactly with it. But the private sector in this country contributes much more than any other country, a westernized country that I can think of, policy-wise and money-wise, and supports the social housing a huge amount.
Okay. Tell us what's coming up for Northacre. What can we see? Any sort of plans brewing? Are we going to see your schemes pop up?
Well, I think that at the moment we're concentrating. We've got £2 billion worth of gross development value in the pipeline at the moment, with One Palace Street, which is 72 apartments overlooking the gardens of Buckingham Palace, which we talked about before. And we've got obviously the Broadway, which is the old New Scotland Yard side, which is a very, very big and big scheme. Having said that, we're always in the market looking for new schemes. We haven't really seen anything of interest at the moment, but if we do, we'll, you know, we're in the market to grow, and we've grown quite dramatically in the last 4 or 5 years, and we'll continue to do so. We've put together a very good architectural and interior design practice, which we've expanded a lot. We now have 20 people there. We're doing projects in Morocco, in Cairo, in the UAE. So the design side of the business is really expanding internationally quite substantially.
Great. And are you able to comment on what's going on with Lancer and your property asset management? I understand.
I can't.
Been...
No.
Okay.
It's not in my remit. It's not in my remit. I knew the question was coming, but it's not in my remit.
We might have to scratch around a little bit.
A little bit more. A little bit more. Yes.
Nicola, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Much.
Thank you for your time.
Cheers.